offering a most loving pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. Dear listeners, we welcome you to this week's episode of Shravanam, Mananam, Nididhyasanam. As always, this is Prem from Team Radio Sai, and with me is Brother Hari. Brother Hari is here today. Now, this morning we actually had a small interaction with all the RJs in the Morning Glory program where, you know, we were commemorating the 5th year of Thursday Life. So I think, Hari, you were sorely missed in the morning. I think we should have called you also because you're very much as much an RJ like any of us.
So yes, I did hear about these celebrations. I also saw the photographs.
Right. I think the next week we should have you on the show too. Because as I was sitting here, I was thinking that we didn't call Hari.
Right.
Because definitely the entire Shravanam Mananam Nididhyasanam second season is being shouldered by you as much as any of us here, I guess.
Yeah, well, it's like a very pleasant duty.
Absolutely. I was
a privilege.
I was in fact telling this morning, you know, these discourses are so profound,
yeah,
that even if we were there in the audience, we would not have had the opportunity to absorb the complete potency of what Swami is saying here.
Yeah, because I did get the invite, and of course I had some work at office, but I was just thinking that, you know, it is a celebratory thing, definitely. But mainly because I think we are getting more out of this program.
Absolutely.
Perhaps than the listeners at times, because the amount of churning that takes place. One thing is I've noticed, it's like that salutary effect of going so deeply through what Swami teaches, and that has an effect on pretty much every sphere of life. Right?
Right.
So, because for one thing, like it does start. I mean, you begin to start thinking, like, you know, how much of this is happening in my life.
Right.
When I especially, in a sense, like we are facing the listeners and speaking, and that question always comes to mind, like how much of this are we able to practice before we speak? And that was always a challenge that Swami used to put. Is to say that there are enough people who can go and speak on a platform, right? So he used to say, platform heroes, but in life they are zeros.
Right.
So that was a constant, warning that he used to give, not to be taken in by your ability to speak on something.
Mm.
Millions of people can do, and nowadays we have the internet. Just a matter of a few
Absolutely,
minutes of
right.
putting a few facts together, and anybody can give
Become
a
speaker.
Talk.
Yeah. Right. In fact, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, one of the descriptions of Kali Yuga, I've quoted this many times on the program, it says that someone who can speak well will be misunderstood to be a scholar.
Hmm.
And because that is clearly how it is. Information is so easily accessible. Even Swami's literature is so much easily accessible now. You know, you could carry the entire 15 volumes of Vahinis and 42 volumes of Sathya Speaks on your mobile, in your pocket all the time.
Exactly. Right? Yes. And one thing, you know, as devotees, you must always look out for this. See, sometimes many of us attend spiritual talks, right? And what we are sometimes looking for, we should be on the watch out. Are we looking to be entertained, or are we looking for something deep, you know, mm-hmm. something that would actually shift something in our lives, you know? So many of us, I think if we have to be really frank about it, it's almost always tending to entertainment, spiritual entertainment in that sense.
Right.
Which is why, you know, like even if we look at in the ashram, like we look at the talks that are given in the satsang hall, the talks that pertain to Upanishads or Indian scriptures, very unintuitive, but there is a very small audience for that. Right, and that is because those talks do not tend to entertain.
Mm.
And the effort is on the part of the listener, that they should, you know, listen carefully, absorb, and then put it. So it is a real serious aspirant, you know, who would want to do that.
Right.
Rest are just wanting to, you know, perhaps get entertained. And like many of us definitely fall in that category. But
and I think even as speakers, you tend to cater to that audience. You know,
yes.
You try to speak. I mean, that's one thing when you go through these summer course discourses, every time it strikes you, you know, Swami is speaking to an audience which is certainly not prepared for what Swami is giving.
Exactly.
But Swami is giving what he has to give.
It's completely uncompromising.
Right? And one of the seniors in the university was sharing the day when Swami came out of the interview room and announced that henceforth we will not collect any fees in the university. Mm. In fact, for the first few years, about 4 years or something, there was a minimal fees which was collected when there was the Sathisai College. Mm. When it became the university, Swami said henceforth we will not collect any fees of any type. So apparently Swami came out of the interview room after deliberations with the elders. And he came to the portico and told the teachers and students sitting there jubilantly that henceforth there is no fees. Right? Oh. So then Swami immediately turned to the teachers and said, you don't worry, I will ensure that you get your salaries. But what Swami said after that was very profound. Swami said, see, if we don't charge the students for education, we don't have to give them what they want. We can give them what has to be given.
Right.
They cannot question us. We can give them what is necessary to be given. Yeah. And that's not just for the university. That's so much true for Swami's discourses too. And Swami stood there and he did not see whether you are qualified enough to be a listener of the Upanishads or a commentary on the Upanishads. He said at some time it will reach you. Sometimes you will wake up to it.
Yeah.
And that's the beauty and that courage, even as we go out as speakers, even as we try to share Swami's message, the ability to courageously put forth the truth and make it as undiluted as possible. I think that's a
because in that effort to make the message palatable and to win the audience over, what gets lost is actually the message.
Right.
If you see nowadays a lot of so-called spiritual speakers, so they have their eye on the audience as to how much, how well received their message will be by the audience, and that is where the mischief starts. And so you begin to dilute it, and there is very little to distinguish a spiritual talk from a bumper sticker statement, right?
Right.
Which may not be the truth. Yeah, it may be very catchy, but it may not be the truth.
Right.
But when you come to the Upanishads, they are absolutely not there to please anybody.
It's absolutely. And you know, after the first season of Shravanam, Mananam, Nididhyasanam, I think as hosts of the show, we did not have the courage to do another one. You know, because It really requires, as you're saying, that to take up a topic like this and speak on it, it needs a lot of self-reflection, and you need to look at yourself and see that, you know, where are you standing? Are you able to, you know, play a clip of Swami and then say that this is what Swami is saying, or this is what I think Swami is saying?
Right.
That itself needs a lot of, you know, internal churning to be there before you can do that.
Yes.
I think thanks to our listeners who had more confidence in us than we had in ourselves, who kept repeating that we need to go back to the show.
But because I think they were more aware that it is actually Swami who is doing the show more than the people who are sitting there and speaking.
Right.
And I can tell you, I remember a segment, I think now we can speak about it, a segment that happened a couple of weeks back. I remember sitting in despair, you know, just thinking, what is this content? It is too dense. Like even I had absolutely no idea, where is this? What is the source of what Swami is speaking, so that I can read more, you know, to update myself. And people I asked, even they were not able to enlighten me as to where I can read upon that. I had absolutely given up, Prem. I'm telling you, I was like ready to come to the program with an empty mind. And just an hour before the program, all completely serendipitous, I happened to open something on the internet. I wasn't even looking. I had given up, resigned. I just reading something, and there I saw the link, you know.
Wow.
The whole thing, like whatever I needed, what Swami was talking about, in which Upanishad it was being spoken about, that is where I got the link. Then I realized, you know, if Swami has to make the program happen, he can make even, as you know, Namdev would make even a bull chant Vedas, right? So very ordinary humans like us, Swami can make anything happen.
Absolutely. I always think this, you know, when you're traveling, if you're going on a hike, to carry a burden on your shoulder impedes your ability to be a good explorer, right? So I think that's the same thing with us. To carry the title of a scholar is actually a burden for an explorer, for a learner. I think our advantage is we don't have that. We are not scholars.
Luckily.
Right? We are not authorities in what we are speaking on. As I was mentioning this morning, we are literally like children who are in awe of Swami. Like, you know, we're looking at it and, oh wow, Swami is saying this. Oh wow, Swami is teaching this. And I think let's only hope that we always have that wonder element in us and look at Swami's words and works with that same enjoyment, and I think with that prayer we'll go forward. Talking about the ability to speak should be backed with the ability to practice what you speak. I think that's precisely what Swami was talking last week, right, when Swami spoke about the importance of practice.
Yeah.
And Swami said, he quoted that verse from the Bhagavad Gita where he said, Shreyuhi Jnana Abhyasat. He said that, and I think you gave a beautiful explanation of how Swami actually uses that, that verse, which is a little different from its actual meaning in the Bhagavad Gita, but it's not, in essence, different from what Swami is saying.
Exactly. Right? Like, because at first reading, you know, if you just directly translate it, it says, wisdom is better than practice, which goes against what Swami has constantly said, that even in interviews he would say, practice, abhyasam, 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 practice. But what we see here is that it is emphasizing good practice,
right,
in the sense that you must constantly improve through wisdom, and that wisdom is, you know, it is granted through the practice of meditation, right? So the entire verse, if we can read it out, Shreyohi Jnanam Abhyasat Jnanat Dhyanam Vishishyate Dhyanat Karma Falatyagam Tyagat Shantir Anantaram. So the first is that wisdom is better than practice. It is to be understood that that wisdom is what guides practice, advises what is a good practice. And how is that wisdom obtained? There are several ways of obtaining wisdom, right? We can read books and we can listen to talks by learned scholars or enlightened people. But the best source of wisdom is what sprouts within us. And for that it is advised that hence meditation itself is better than wisdom. It's not that you abandon wisdom for meditation because it's a higher thing. It is that is the source of true wisdom, that meditation. And finally, of course, we came to that very important statement, which is almost one of the important teachings of the Upanishads itself, that renouncing the fruits of actions is the best. Mm. And the Gita's message is, of course, right. And we were seeing, I think the last, as we were signing off, we saw that one of the reasons why this renouncing of fruits, especially in the context of Gita, one of the primary themes in the Gita is dharma. And unless, you know, if your eye is always on the fruits, then dharma is a casualty. Right? We saw that we had the example of one of our alumni, right, who said for him that dharma is important and not the consequence of following that dharma.
Right.
And that is completely left to the Lord, what he does with it. And many times we see that actually the Lord himself has assured that dharma rakshati rakshitaha. And we should always remember in mind that if things are not going well, it's because it's not the end. It's still,
right,
so that statement of the Lord will always get fulfilled. When Swami has said that dharma rakshati rakshitaha, it will get fulfilled. No matter, even if it at current state, it doesn't look like it. And there's no intuition, no logic behind that, except faith.
Right.
And that's the only...
No, a couple of days back, I just happened to listen to one of the conversations that Bishu had with an elderly devotee. I wanted to go back and refer who that person is. I just missed me, but I think what he was saying was very beautiful. He came to Swami in the 1980s, and he happened to be, I think, a developer, property developer in United States or something like that. And he was saying that from the backing that he had, from the Christian upbringing that he gave a lot of value for righteousness and honesty and all of that. But he said when he came and he heard Swami speak about dharma, and then he read the Dharma Vaini, he was completely bowled over by this concept of dharma that Swami was speaking. That, you know, it was not just about being right or being exact in your transactions, but it is something much larger than that, that Swami raises dharma to one of the absolute values, you know, right. Satya, Dharma, Shanti, Prema are absolute values. And absolute values have a regard which you give for divinity itself.
Right.
So he said that it's a completely different concept altogether. So he said that when he went back, he wanted to, as much as possible, follow that in his daily life. Right. So he was saying that he had got into a situation where they started building one particular property, and as it always happens in the real estate, there was a fluctuation in the market. And it came to a point where the whole thing had to be scrapped off, and he could have actually walked away from the project without taking any harm to himself. Only the people who were doing the construction, the other contractors, they would have lost. But he said, see, if this project had gone well, I would have had the profit. So the fact that it is not going well, I should be able to stand there and take the loss too.
Right.
And that is righteousness. That is the dharmic thing to do.
Mm.
So he said for the next 1.5 years, he went around selling all his other property and all his other earnings which he had so that he can pay off everybody else who was involved in the project so that nobody was being hit by that turn of events. And he said in 1980s, it was about over $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
He was completely broke in the process.
Very big hit.
Right? Mm-hmm. He said, I was completely broke. I'd lost everything, but I was so happy that I had done what I had to do.
Right.
And he said, just a week or so after this whole thing was done, it took 1.5 years for him to settle the whole thing. He gets a call from another company which says that we would like to enter into the business in your city. Would you like to partner with us? So he said, I have no money. I'm completely broke. He said, no, that's all right. We just want your experience. Just join us. And he said in a matter of 2 or 3 years, through that association, he got back 10 times what he lost.
Oh, good.
10 times what he lost, and 10 million in that period, 85, is huge, right? Probably it doesn't happen every time. Probably it will not happen every time that you take the right decision. But that one impetus that you get when you do the right thing, you know, it takes you along for the rest of your life.
Yeah, right? Because just as you mentioned this, when you said Australia triggered off something, I had a memory of something I had just recently seen, you know, a small documentary on how Australia, you know, now in US we have this whole debate on, you know, rifles, like ownership of gun control. That so in Australia, the what triggered off was a particular mass shooting event, which happens very often in the US, and it happened in Australia. And at that moment, the government over there, they decided that they would take the unpopular step of actually banning private ownership of guns.
Okay.
And unless vetted and you know, the government permits, right? So that that particular event and the documentary showed, you know, that how the politicians who are involved in that, like the politicians who said, okay, let us pass this even if it is unpopular with people, right? Those people, they suffered politically, but they were very happy that they were able to serve the nation. That they saw like how the incidents of such, of course, the mass shootings came down, then incidents of murders and crime in general, they all came down and they felt that satisfaction that you have served the country. And their political career is finished. You know, they were at the top of their careers when they took this decision, knowing that their careers were finished. But they said, yes, you know, with this we are serving the country. And even today when they are asked, would you change how events turned out, would you, knowing that, you know, you are a nobody now, would you still take such a decision? They said, yes, we would. You know, so that is a beautiful thing. As you were saying, it may not turn out at the worldly level, it may not turn out well, you know.
Right.
But that satisfaction which he has, that he has served a higher cause, I think that cannot be replaced by anything else.
Right. I mean, that's precisely what, you know, when Bhagavad Gita says that don't place your bet on the results of what you're doing. You're just, it's not that you're completely selfless. You become a little, I would say, a higher level of selfishness where you go after the self-satisfaction.
Right?
It's just that you're not going after the satisfaction that comes from outside, but you're going after the satisfaction that comes from within. I think that was one of the main themes of what Swami said. Again, going back to that shloka one more time.
Right.
Very beautifully what Swami says, you know, wisdom is better than practice. And as you're saying, practice can be anything. It could be wrong practice. It could be harmful practice. But that practice which actually leads to wisdom and is born out of wisdom, that's what Swami means when he says, Feyohi Jnanam Abhyasat. And it is not just that wisdom, has to be spontaneous. When Swami says meditation is better than wisdom, whenever Swami speaks of meditation, Swami would say it's one step higher than contemplation. So when you say contemplation, you're thinking over it, you're mulling over it, you're, you know, rolling it over in your mind, debating it within yourself. But meditation is a state where you don't have thoughts, which means you do it spontaneously. You know, the wisdom becomes so much a part of you that it becomes a natural decision to take. And so this is something which Swami would tell about the character of Yudhishthira in Mahabharata. Right? There were other characters who were dharmic, you know, even Bhishma or the other Pandavas were there. But it was only Dharmaraja who would spontaneously land up at the right decision every time. Anytime you ask him what is the right thing to do, he'll be able to tell it without having to deliberate upon it. So he said that is why his adherence to dharma was actually a notch higher than the others. And then Swami says, you know, that renouncing the fruits of action is the best. as Swami would say many times, the perfect display of wisdom is shown in your detachment. Right? Mm. If you don't have that detachment, I think in the Jnanavayani, Swami says, if jnana and bhakti is not fortified by vairagya, then it's like a leaky pot. You don't know when you're going to lose both of these virtues.
Right.
So literally Swami says, renouncing the fruits of actions is the best. So I think that's why we stopped. And as we have seen in every discourse, Swami starts with the abstract, and Swami goes on to an explanation, and towards the end comes the practical part. I think mm-hmm. that's the part we are in this discourse, where Swami starts talking of terms which we can completely relate to.
Mm.
One is, of course, practice. The other ones which are coming are about fear, anger and attachment. So I think we'll go to that clip and listen to what Swami has to say.
Sure.
The Brahmananda moment is not the happiness that you buy elsewhere. The thinking of one's own real self is Brahmananda. The realization of one's own self is supreme bliss. Man thinks that there is something separate from him. When I get it, then only I'll be happy. That illusion is the cause for this attachment. Out of this attachment, fear started. How has it come? That which I aspired, would I be able to get it or not? After having acquired, whether do I able to protect or not? Would I keep it safe or not? There started fear. The fear turns into anger. The attachment, fear, anger follow in sequence. When there is no attachment, there is no anger and fear.
కనుక రాగము చేతనే ఇవన్నీ మనకు ప్రారంభమవుతున్నాయి.
దే స్టార్టెడ్ బికాస్ ఆఫ్ అటాచ్మెంట్ రాగ.
ఏమిటి ఈ రాగము?
వాట్ ఈస్ దిస్ రాగము?
అదే వాంఛ.
దట్ ఈస్ డిజైర్.
ఈనాటి వాంఛలకు మితిమీరిపోతుండాలి.
ద డిజైర్స్ ఆర్ బౌండ్లెస్ టుడే.
ఈ మితిమీరిపోయినటువంటి వాంఛల వల్లనే మానవుని యొక్క స్థితిగతులు తప్పుతుండాలి.
బికాస్ ఆఫ్ ఎక్సెసివ్ డిజైర్ మ్యాన్ లాస్ట్ హిస్ పొజిషన్.
తాను ఏ విధంగా బ్రతకాలి, నేను ఎవరు అనేటువంటి యొక్క తన స్వరూపాన్ని కూడా మర్చిపోతున్నాడు.
హియాస్ ఫర్గాటన్ హౌ హీ షుడ్ లివ్.
నేను దానవుడు అనేటువంటి యొక్క దివ్యమైనటువంటి తత్వం కూడా మర్చిపోయి దానవుడుగా మారిపోతున్నాడు.
హీ ఫర్గాట్ దిస్ డివైన్ ఫామ్ అండ్ ఈస్ కండక్టింగ్ హిమ్సెల్ఫ్ లైక్ ఎ డెమన్.
మానవత్వాన్ని మర్చడం చేతనే చేసిన ఉపకారాన్ని కూడా నువ్వు విస్మరిస్తున్నాడు.
Because he has forgotten human quality, he lost his gratitude.
ఈ ఉపకారం లేకపోయినప్పుడు అపకారం చేస్తున్నాడు.
అండ్ హీ స్టార్టెడ్ హార్మింగ్ అదర్స్ ఇన్స్టెడ్ ఆఫ్ హెల్పింగ్ దెమ్.
కనుకనే మొట్టమొదట తన మానవత్వాన్ని తప్పక గుర్తించడానికి ప్రయత్నించాలి.
Therefore, man should realize the human quality in him.
ఇదే మానవతాకు విలువలు అత్యవసరము.
Therefore, human values are very important.
మానవతా విలువలు ఈనాడు కోల్పోవటం చేతనే,
because human values are lost,
ఈ జగత్తులో ఇన్ని విధములైనటువంటి యొక్క క్రూర కృత్యములు, భయంకరమైనటువంటి చర్యలు జరుగుతూ వస్తున్నాయి.
Because human values are lost, we find all wickedness and cruelties in the world.
కేవలము దానవునిగా రూపొందుతూ వస్తున్నాడు.
మ్యాన్ హాస్ బికమ్ ఎ డెమన్ టుడే.
తన అభిష్టమునకు విరుద్ధంగా నడిచినప్పుడు తల్లినైన కూడా లెక్క చేయటం లేదు మానవుడు.
వెన్ హిస్ డిజైర్ ఇస్ నాట్ ఫుల్ఫిల్డ్, హీ డజంట్ అకామిడేట్ ఈవెన్ హిస్ మదర్.
కనుక తన యొక్క డిజైర్ ఏ ముఖ్యమైనటువంటి జీవితంగా భావిస్తున్నాడు.
హీ థింక్స్ దట్ ఫుల్ఫిల్మెంట్ ఆఫ్ డిజైర్ ఇస్ ఇంపార్టెంట్ ఇన్ లైఫ్.
అది కాదు, మానవత్వమే ముఖ్యము.
ది హ్యూమన్ క్వాలిటీ ఇస్ ఇంపార్టెంట్.
మానవత్వం ముఖ్యంగా ఉండినప్పుడే అన్ని డిజైర్స్ దాని సహజంగానే రూపొందిపోతాయి.
వెన్ వన్స్ వీ నో ది హ్యూమానిటీ, ఆల్ డిజైర్స్ ఆర్ ఫుల్ఫిల్డ్.
కేవలం మానవత్వం పోయిన తర్వాత నీ వాంఛను నెరవేరి ప్రయోజనం ఏమిటి?
వెన్ దట్ హ్యూమన్ నేచర్ ఇస్ లాస్ట్, వాట్ ఈస్ ది యూజ్ ఆఫ్ ఫుల్ఫిలింగ్ యువర్ డిజైర్.
మానవుడు అనేక వాంఛల చేత అనేక విధములుగా కూడాను కొన్ని మంచి చెడ్డలు సంపాదన చేసుకుంటున్నాడు.
మ్యాన్ ఇన్ వైల్ ఫుల్ఫిలింగ్ హిస్ డిజైర్స్ హస్ గాట్ బోత్ గుడ్ అండ్ బ్యాడ్.
కానీ మానవుడే లేకపోతే ఈ సుఖ దుఃఖములు ఎవరికి?
When once there are no human beings, there are huge buildings.
Bank lo balance kavalsinanta untundadi.
There's lot of balance in the bank.
Intlo sukha santoshamulu sadupayamu sarvamu untundadi.
There peace and prosperity at home.
Kani undi prayojanam emiti?
But what value of it?
Manavattam lekapovadam cheta,
because of loss of humanity,
anni kudanu nirarthakam aipothunnayi.
Everything will be in vain.
Kanuka motta motta vidyarthulara, మానవత్వాన్ని మనం అభివృద్ధి పరచుకోవాలి.
Therefore, students first foster human quality.
మానవుడు మానవుడిగా బ్రతకడానికి ప్రయత్నించాలి.
Human being should live as a human being.
సమాజంలో గౌరవ ఆదర్శాలను మనం పొందాలి.
He should earn the repute and
మనిషి మరణించినా కూడా ఆదర్శం మరణించేటువంటిది కాదు.
Even after the death of man, the ideals remain.
కనుక ఆదర్శం విద్యార్థిగా మీరు రూపొందాలి.
You should be ideal students.
ఎక్కడికి పోయినా కూడా నువ్వు మంచి పేరును కీర్తిని సంపాదించాలి.
Wherever you go, you should earn good repute.
దేని వల్ల వస్తుంది అది కీర్తి?
How do you get repute?
కీర్తి అపకీర్తులకు మనం నడతలే మూల కారణం.
For the repute and disrepute, behavior is the reason.
కనుక మనం నడతను అభివృద్ధి చేసుకోవాలి.
Therefore, we should improve our behavior.
10 మందికి మెచ్చినట్టుగా మనం నడుచుకోవాలి.
We should conduct ourselves pleasing to all people.
10 మంది నచ్చటమో నచ్చకపోవటమో నీకు అక్కర్లేదు. నీకు నీకు నచ్చినట్టుగా నడుచుకోవాలి.
నో మ్యాటర్ విత్ అదర్స్,
నీకు తృప్తి పడాలి.
యువర్ కాన్షియన్స్ మస్ట్ బి ప్లీజ్డ్.
కానీ అది కూడా పడటం లేదు.
Even that satisfaction is not there.
కనుకని నిన్ను నీవు ద్రోహం చేసుకుంటున్నావు.
You are betraying your own
self. నిన్ను మోసం చేసుకుంటున్నావు.
You are betraying your own self.
నిన్ను నీవే అన్ని విధాలా కూడాను కొన్ని చెడ మార్గంలో ప్రవేశిస్తున్నావు.
In fact, you yourself is entering into different
path. నీకు నీవే దొంగగా రూపొందిపోతున్నావు.
You yourself have become a thief.
ఆ విధంగా ఉండకూడదు.
You shouldn't be like that.
నీవు నీలో ఉండేటువంటి దొంగలను పట్టేటువంటి యజమానుడు కావాలి.
యూ షుడ్ క్యాప్చర్ ద ప్రిజనర్ ఇన్ యూ.
విద్యార్థులారా, మీరు మాస్టర్స్ కావాలి కానీ స్లేవ్స్ కాకూడదు.
స్టూడెంట్స్ యూ షుడ్ బి మాస్టర్స్ బట్ నెవర్ స్లేవ్స్.
అన్నింటినీ ఇంద్రియాలు నిగ్రహించుకుని,
కంట్రోలింగ్ ది సెన్సెస్,
దుఃఖము విచారము కష్టము అనేటువంటి వాటిని సహించుకొని భరించుకొని,
టాలరేటింగ్ ద గ్రీఫ్ అండ్ మిజరీ,
మనస్సుకు సరి అయినటువంటి ధైర్య సాహసాలు అందించాలి.
యూ షుడ్ గివ్ కరేజ్ అండ్ వాలర్ టు ద మైండ్.
ఇట్టి గ్లూకోజ్ ఇంజెక్షన్, ఇట్టి కాల్షియం ఇంజెక్షన్ ఒక ఉపనిషత్తుల ద్వారానే మనకు లభ్యమవుతుంది.
దాట్ విచ్ గివ్స్ కరేజ్ అండ్ వాలర్ ఇస్ గివెన్ త్రూ గ్లూకోజ్ ఇంజెక్షన్ అండ్ కాల్షియం ఇంజెక్షన్ ఇన్ ద ఫార్మ్ ఆఫ్ ఉపనిషత్.
ఇది ఉపనిషత్తులే దీనికి సరి అయినటువంటి యొక్క అర్థము.
ద ఉపనిషత్ ఆఫర్ రియల్ మీనింగ్.
ఈ పదములు ఎంతే ఉంటుండాలి సర్వసారం.
ఎవ్రీ ఎసెన్స్ ఇస్ కంటైన్డ్ ఇన్ ద వర్డ్.
ఉపా సమీపములో ఉంటుండాలి.
ఉపా మీన్స్ దాట్ విచ్ ఇస్ ప్రెసెంట్ క్లోజ్ బై.
ఆ సమీపంలో ఉండినప్పుడు దాని యొక్క విలువలన్నీ కూడా మనకు లభ్యమవుతాయి.
వెన్ ఇట్స్ సో నియర్ యూ కెన్ రియలైజ్ ఇట్స్ వాల్యూ.
ఒక చిన్న ఉదాహరణము,
ఏ స్మాల్ ఎగ్జాంపుల్.
ఒక ఎయిర్ కండిషన్ రూమ్ లోపల,
ఇన్ ఎన్ ఎయిర్ కండిషన్ రూమ్,
ఎయిర్ కండిషన్ సమీపంలో పోయి నీవు కూర్చుంటే,
వెన్ యూ సిట్ క్లోజ్ ఎయిర్ కండిషన్,
ఆ ఎయిర్ కండిషన్ నుంచి వచ్చేటువంటి చల్లని గాలి నీకు తగిలి నీలో ఉండేటువంటి వేడి దూరం అయిపోతుంది.
Because of the cool breeze that comes out of air conditioner, the heat in you will get up.
ఎక్కడైనా హిల్ స్టేషన్స్ కి పోయినప్పుడు,
when you go to hill stations,
హీటర్స్ పెట్టుకుంటావు.
You have freezers there, heaters there.
హీటర్ కు ముందుగా నీవు కూర్చుంటే నీ చల్లదనం దూరం అయిపోతుంది. ఈ హీటర్ యొక్క దీని నీకు హాయిని వస్తుంది.
When you sit close to the heater, you will get every temperature there and the
కనుకనే అది నిన్ను దైవముకు సమీపంగా పోస్తే నీ దుర్గుణములు పోతాయి, దైవం సద్గుణములు నీకు అలవడిస్తాయి.
When you are close to the divinity, you will get all the divine qualities and bad qualities in
you. దుర్గుణములు నీకు వస్తాయి, నీ దుర్గుణములు పోతాయి.
You get those virtues and all your vices will go.
సమీపం.
Therefore, upam and proximity.
క్రింద.
Ni means below.
బైఠో.
సత్ సిద్ధాం.
కూర్చో.
సిద్ధాం.
నీవు ఆ దానికి సమీపంలో పోయి కూర్చో, దాని యొక్క సద్గుణములన్నీ కూడా నీకు అలవడిస్తాయి.
వెన్ వన్స్ యూ సిట్ డౌన్ వెరీ క్లోజ్లీ, యూల్ గెట్ ఆల్ వర్చ్యూ.
ఇదే ఉపనిషత్తు యొక్క నిజమైనటువంటి అర్థం.
దిస్ ద రియల్ మీనింగ్ ఆఫ్ ఉపనిషత్.
ఉపనిషత్తు అంటే ఏదో కొన్ని కావ్యములు, కొన్ని విధమైన కథలు, కొన్ని ఋషులు రాసినటువంటి తత్వములు అని మనం ఆలోచన చేస్తున్నాం.
వీ షుడ్ నాట్ నెగ్లెక్ట్ ఉపనిషత్స్ యాజ్ కాంపోజిషన్స్ ఆఫ్ ఋషీస్ యాజ్ సమ్ టాలర్ స్టోరీస్.
పిచ్చి పిచ్చి కథలను శ్రద్దాభక్తులతో చదువుతుంటారు.
స్టూడెంట్స్ యూ రీడ్ స్టోరీస్ ఆఫ్
నావెల్స్.
నావెల్స్.
కానీ ఈ ఉపనిషత్తును చదివి కొంతవరకు దీనిలో ఉన్నటువంటి దానిని అర్థం చేసుకోవడానికి ప్రయత్నించరాదా?
Should you not try to understand the meaning of the Upanishad?
చాలా మంది పిల్లలు ట్రైన్ లో ట్రావెల్ చేస్తుంటే అక్కడ కూడా ఈ నావల్ బుక్ ఉండాలా, అది ఉంటే స్టేషన్ వచ్చిందా స్టేషన్ లేదా ఏది కూడా వాళ్ళకి తెలియదు, అన్నీ మర్చిపోయిపోతుంటారు.
Students while in travel they carry the novel. Sometimes they forget even the station
also. ప్రభావం చేత,
because of the impact of the Kali,
ఈ టెలివిజన్ లు టెలి
రేడియో వీడియో
వీడియోలు ఇవన్నీ వస్తున్నాయి.
Because of the effect of the Kali, we find the radio, video and the TV.
ఈ హాలిడేస్ లో ప్ర ఇండకు పోయినప్పుడు ఈ పిల్లలు భోజనాలు కూడా వీడియోల ముందండి.
During holidays they dine even before video.
భోంచేస్తూ కూడా దాన్ని చూస్తూ భోంచేసేయాలి.
While partaking food they see and then take their food.
కనుక ఎలాంటి ఫుడ్డో అలాంటి హెడ్ అవుతుంది.
What sort of food you consume, that type of head you get.
చూస్తూ చూస్తూ ఆ థాట్స్ నీ యొక్క ఆహారంలో ప్రవేశిస్తాయి.
While watching the TV, all such thoughts enter into your food.
కనుకనే ఫుడ్ ని బట్టి, హెడ్ టు హెడ్ ని బట్టి గాడ్.
Therefore, basing on the food, the head comes out of it. Basing on the head, you will have a
God. చూడండి, మంచి తప్పు లేదు. కానీ ఈ పవిత్రమైనటువంటివి, జీవ్య మార్గాన్ని అందించేటువంటివి ఎందుకు నీవు చదవకూడదు?
You can see good things in fact, but why don't you read those things that teach you sacred things and noble ones?
పవిత్రమైన చదవాలంటే హెడేక్, తలనొప్పి వస్తుంది.
For you to read these sacred things, you feel headache.
పిచ్చి పిచ్చి కథలు చదవాలంటే కాలమే వాళ్ళకి కనిపించదు.
You don't find time at all. Think of the time as you do now.
ప్రభావం యొక్క విద్యార్థుల యొక్క మహత్యం.
That is the impact of the Kali among students.
కానీ మన విద్యార్థులు అలాంటి వారు కాదు.
But our students are not of that sort.
కనుక మీరు అప్పుడప్పుడు ఈ పవిత్రమైనటువంటి సత్సంగంలో ప్రవేశించి,
at times you should enter into good company.
ఉపనిషత్తులు, బైబుల్, ఖురాన్, ఇతిహాసం, గ్రంథరాజం, ఇలాంటి సత్గ్రంథములు అంతా కూడా చదవండి, తప్పు లేదు.
You should also read Upanishads, Bible, Quran and all good sacred texts.
ఈ సర్వ గ్రంథములు ఎందుకును పవిత్రమైన భావములు, పవిత్రమైన ఆశయాలు ఉంటున్నాయి.
In all these sacred texts, the sacred ideas, noble thoughts.
ఇలాంటి పవిత్ర గ్రంథములు మీరు చదవటం లేదు కనుకనే పవిత్ర భావం మీలో నుంచి రావటం లేదు.
As you don't read these sacred texts, sacred feelings are not
coming. పవిత్రమైన గ్రంథాలంతా చదవాలి.
దే షుడ్ ఆల్సో రీడ్
పవిత్రమైన దృశ్యాలంతా పోషించుకోవాలి.
దే షుడ్ హ్యావ్ గుడ్ సీన్స్.
వాళ్ళు గర్భంగా ఉండినప్పుడు మూడు సినిమాలు, నాలుగు సినిమాలు చూస్తుంటారు.
వైల్ దే ఆర్ ప్రెగ్నెంట్ దే సీ 3 or 4 సినిమాస్.
కనుకనే వాళ్ళకు పుట్టేటువంటి పిల్లలంతా సినిమా పిల్లలే పుడుతున్నారు.
దేర్ ఫోర్ ద చిల్డ్రన్ దే బిగెట్ ఆర్ సినిమా చిల్డ్రన్ ఓన్లీ.
కారణం ఏమిటి? ఒక్క చిన్న ఉదాహరణ మనం పవిత్రమైన భారత చరిత్రలో మీరు గుర్తించండి.
వాట్స్ ద రీజన్? ఎ స్మాల్ ఎగ్జాంపుల్. ఇట్ ఈస్ నోన్ ఇన్ ఇండియన్ హిస్టరీ.
సుమతి గర్భంగా ఉండిన సమయం లోపల,
వెన్ షీఈస్ ప్రెగ్నెంట్,
అర్జునుడు పద్మవ్యూహాన్ని గురించి చెబుతూ వచ్చాడు సుభద్రకు.
అర్జున స్టార్టెడ్ టీచింగ్ సుభద్ర అబౌట్ పద్మవ్యూహ.
సుభద్ర మైమరచింది.
సుభద్ర ఫర్గాట్.
లోపల ఉన్నటువంటి అభిమన్యుడు ఈ పద్మవ్యూహాన్ని గురించి అంతా విన్నాడు.
అభిమన్య స్టార్టెడ్ లిజనింగ్ టు ది ఎంటైర్ థింగ్.
లీలావతి గర్భంగా ఉండినప్పుడు,
వై లీలావతి వాజ్ ప్రెగ్నెంట్,
నారదుడు వచ్చి పవిత్రమైనటువంటి బ్రహ్మభావాన్ని గురించి బోధించాడు.
నారద స్టార్టెడ్ స్పీకింగ్ అబౌట్ బ్రహ్మ.
అవంతా ప్రహ్లాదుడు చక్కగా విన్నాడు.
ప్రహ్లాద లిజన్ టు ఆల్.
గర్భంలో ఉండినటువంటి శిశువునకు ఈ విధమైనటువంటి యొక్క భావములన్నీ కూడా చేరిపోతున్నాయి.
ద చైల్డ్ ఇన్ ద వూమ్ వుడ్ గెట్ ఆల్ ది థాట్స్.
తల్లికి బిడ్డకు ఒకే సంబంధము, ఒకే ఆహారము.
There is only one actual relationship between the mother and the child.
తల్లులు కూడాను ఈ తగినటువంటి యొక్క శ్రద్ధను పూని,
మదర్స్ ఆల్సో షుడ్ హ్యావ్
పవిత్రమైనటువంటి యొక్క పలుకులు, పవిత్రమైన దృశ్యములు, పవిత్రమైనటువంటి యొక్క శ్రవణములు చేయడానికి తగినటువంటి శ్రద్ధను అభివృద్ధి పరచుకోవాలి.
మదర్స్ ఆల్సో షుడ్ డిటర్మిన్ టు హ్యావ్ గుడ్ సీన్స్, నోబుల్ థాట్స్.
వాట్ ఎ బ్యూటిఫుల్ క్లిప్ ఆఫ్ ఫ్రమ్ దట్ డిస్కోర్స్. సో వెరీ వైబ్రెంట్ అండ్ యూనో ఫుల్ ఆఫ్ ఎనర్జీ. When that point where Swami was talking about the Upanishads, he's saying that don't disregard the Upanishads, don't give up the Upanishads, it's such a beautiful thing, it's such a noble thing. You know, it just takes me back to what the Upanishads really are. You know, in one of the discourses, Swami explains that the Vedas are separated into three, you know, the Brahmanas, the Samhitas and the Aranyakas. And Swami would say the Vedas themselves are Shruti. They have been received when the mind has been completely stilled. And then these are actually further filtered and further concentrated through the in that section of the
classified,
in the Aranyakas. Mm. And then the essence comes as Upanishads.
Right.
And here is Swami standing there, probably the source of all the Vedas itself. And he is not looking whether we have stilled our mind. He is not looking whether we have done the contemplation necessary to receive the essence of the Upanishads. But he's standing there and delivering that very Upanishads. You know, I really can't see if we can be more fortunate than that to receive this directly from Swami. I mean, amazing it is. You know, and the way Swami is breaking that whole thing up, and especially the starting of the thing, Swami speaks about Atmanandam, the Brahmanandam. That's precisely what Swami started the entire discourse with. Swami was saying that Brahma and Anandam, it is not any ordinary bliss. I think Swami would tell this in other discourses. Swami would say, you eat a sweet which is very favorite to you and you say, aha, Brahmanandam. You have any idea what is Brahmanandam? And you're comparing that joy to Brahmanandam. And Swami would say that Brahmanandam cannot come without the presence of Brahman or the knowledge of Brahman. That's why Swami started the whole thing. So Swami is going back to that thing and in a one line, Swami is beautifully explaining it. There is an object separate from me. When I acquire it, I'll be happy and blissful. When this seeking stops, and when you realize that all that you need to be happy is actually within you, Swami says that is when you attain the true bliss of Brahmanandam.
Yeah. And I think it kind of, like what was said in the previous segment, and in fact some of the things we spoke, they kind of lead very beautifully into this. So I was looking at how Swami says that there is an object separate from me, and when I acquire it, I'll be happy. He's basically describing the human state.
Right.
Because that is the game that is played by the mind.
Mm.
And at all times. Because the mind is always after the next big thing. Like if you see, you know, throughout our lives, that is practically what is happening. Like when we are young and at some point of time, like, you know, we realize that there's some career that we have to get into and all that. And so it first starts, you know, if I become an engineer, then I'll be happy. And then you become an engineer and then you see, like, you know, actually that happiness which you thought would come, that's not what it is providing. And then people look for, okay, let me get married and then I'll be happy. And then they'll say, okay, that doesn't do it for me. Then let me look at a job. And then, you know, at the job, the next increment, the next promotion. And then it's time for, you know, your kids to get married. And like, practically at all points of time, the mind is like treating you like a donkey and holding a carrot constantly in front of you and enticing you, like, and you're it's a very, you know, how do I say, pitiful analogy, but then we are indeed like a donkey with our tongues, you know, hanging out, running after that carrot the whole time, right? And that's why at the end of life, you know, many people have that regret that there may be something that I did not do. They can't put a finger on that. The entire life you're thinking like, and from the outside, you know, the person looks completely like he's got everything, got and has it together. And still, you know, at the end of it, you know, there's that movie called Citizen Kane. Right? And they say, you know, at the end of, the initial, this thing they show that the Citizen Kane, he's the owner of a newspaper, like, and a great business magnate. And when he dies, his dying statement, he just says one thing called Rosebud. He just says Rosebud. And for a long time, like, people think about what is this Rosebud? Why did he say that, you know? So as they inquire and inquire and inquire, they find out finally that actually it is that when he was a kid, he used to enjoy tobogganing in the snow, right? He used to have a snow sled. And as a kid, he used to play in that sled. And that sled was named Rosebud. And then the entire thing becomes very clear. You know, this is a person who grew up in poverty, right? And then decided that his life's mission is to accumulate as much wealth as possible. So creates a massive business empire.
Okay.
But at the end, as he looks, you know, in your dying moments, you're kind of replaying your entire life. And the one happy memory that he preserves after all that are those simple days when as a child, he used to go, you know, snow sledding, you know, snow tobogganing. And that was what he enjoyed the most. And it wasn't all that wealth which he accumulated. He says, you know, the story is all about how that one memory is what lasted for him right at the end. You know, that's what he carried as his happy moment. Right? And because that is the game the mind plays. You know, if, just imagine, Prem, that if we were completely contented with what we had right now, you know, the life as such would end for us, right? There's no, you know, like, the mind would become completely still. You can almost imagine that, right? That if we were completely okay with whatever we had right now, you know, we could say that, yes, this is perfect for me. And that moment, it would all cease. The game would end, right? So,
I think, you know, what you were saying about our goal, it keeps moving ahead of us, literally, like that carrot hanging in front of you, right? But it's when you look back now, I was just telling somebody the other day, you know, when you're a little child, you asked what you want to become when you grow up. And invariably, we would say a doctor, an engineer or something. Now, when you look back, that's a goal that you reach precisely probably in your 25th year, 26th year, which is like one third of your life. And we encourage all our children to have such dreams. You know, what do you want to become? You want to become a pilot? You want to become this? Most of those things are probably reached, I mean, 70-60% of them might reach the goal that they have in their childhood, let's say. Yeah. But even those who reach it, they reach it in one quarter or one third of their life.
Mm.
And what do you do after that? You know, most of the people, they say that, you know, it's actually not given me what I wanted. And you've already spent a good amount of your productive years trying to achieve that goal. And if only, as Swami was saying that, you know, when Swami would speak about the noble mothers of India, he would say this, how they would bring up their children talking about Atma Vidya, bring up their children speaking about the perfection of, you know, the human nature. To infants, to toddlers, they would put the children to sleep in that manner. You're already giving a goal which can actually take them a lifetime or even lifetimes to achieve.
Mm.
You know, it's a perfection which is going to take all of your energy and all of your abilities to reach. I'm not saying that give them something which is so difficult to achieve so that they can occupy themselves throughout their life, but giving them something so meaningful that with the changes that happen and with age, with the maturity which comes in, the goal only becomes clearer. It does not become something different.
Right.
And it does not become something which is hollow. Because most of the time, we, even as we approach the goal, we realize that that's not what we thought will give us what the happiness that we thought is going to give us.
Hmm.
I think that is the thing which, you know, Swami says that throughout, as you're saying, that the game that the mind plays is like that. It always keeps what you want, makes it appear like it's different from you. And that realization is not different from me. That's why I say, you know, when you take the Samaveda and the Rigveda is supposed to be appeasing the gods to achieve what you want to achieve. Right? Mm. Rigveda is precisely that. You know, it contains mostly all those shlokas which you chant to appease the Lord. I want this. And, you know, Swami would say chamakkam and all that. The beauty is, finally, when you distill the Samaveda and the Rigveda and finally you come to the Mahavakyas, it comes to Tattvamasi.
Hmm.
Which means you are that. What you've been seeking all your life, you're actually one with that. So that process which was started by thinking that I want this to be happy, I want that to be happy, I want all of these to be complete. You know, the essence of that whole body of knowledge is finally comes to Tattvamasi.
Hmm.
You and that are one. You know, and I think that is what Swami is saying, that Upanishad can give you that knowledge.
Right.
Instead of the modern day secular education.
Yeah. And just continuing, like, from what was said, the next thing that Swami says is that he speaks about attachment, right? So, from attachment comes fear. And Swami actually goes through the kind of what the mind starts talking to itself at, you know, when that attachment takes root, is that will I get what I want or not?
Right.
And then the next, like, even if I obtain it, will I be able to retain it forever? And this is like, I think most of the people can relate to this, that when they buy a car, within the first 3 or 4 days, they say, like, the buyer's remorse sets in.
Mm.
Right? That, and that, so initially that it is a very beautiful object in your mind, that next car that you possess. But after you buy it, and then, you know, all this, even if I obtain it, will I be able to retain it forever? You know, will I be able to safeguard it? Now, these are the new fears that set in. Like, is it as good as I thought it would be? Right? And we see that what is this attachment to is actually the attachment to the sense of self.
Mm.
You know, and the moment you get sucked into that sense of self, what happens is that's when you start catering to only those instead of looking at the higher purpose. Just as you were saying, like, and this is, I think, something that is plaguing so many people of the at their middle age right now, as you were rightly mentioning, the goals that they are set for themselves are so shallow that they are getting exhausted by the time they are
reach
at their,
them, right?
Yeah, mid-30s, mid-40s, they're kind of done exhausting and they have literally, you know, what shall I say, wrung it for all it is worth, you know. I recall some 4 or 5 years ago, we had gone to the Nandi Hills, a couple of people from here, my colleagues and I, we had gone to the Nandi Hills. And, you know, when I climb the hills, there's one place where it kind of plateaus out. So there's a nice, like a tabletop, you know, a flat space. And I was watching, there were this, a group of youth, you know. So they were there in their cars. There's one, like a electric pole in between. And these people are simply circling round and round and round. And for whatever reason, they seemed to be in enormous mirth, you know. They were laughing, clapping and all. And for the life of me, I couldn't figure out what was it that was making
giving them
happy.
So much joy.
Yeah, what was that glee all about, right? And then as watching them carefully, I noticed that in their eyes, there was no mirth. it was just an external show that they were putting, you know. It's mm-hmm. like their lives. So something is missing out there, you know, where they see, where we watch people who are apparently happy. They have everything, you know, they had very posh cars and everything was hunky-dory, as you would say. But there's some element missing, right? Their eyes told all the story. And so that, what is causing that, you know, where you're wedded to a very, what shall I say, very ordinary kind of purpose to your life. Whereas if you look at Swami, he creates such a huge purpose like, let me make healthcare available to people who cannot afford it. Now, that is a goal which you can never complete in any life, you know.
Right.
Even, let's say people who take up projects like we'll appease the hunger of the world. Now, people might say, what a foolish thing you're doing. But that's a very sensible decision because that is a purpose that to the end of their lives, they're going to keep striving towards that
right.
purpose and never reach it.
It's so large a dream that even others can come in and still...
Exactly, you can accommodate so many more into that dream. Beautiful,
right.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, a few days ago, I think I was discussing this with you, that I had joined like a online math forum, right? And I was observing a certain trend that had started happening, which I think I'll share in this context. You know, first when I joined that particular forum, it was all about what I can learn, you know. I saw that, oh, I have now access to such a fantastic resource. The best mathematical minds in the entire world are congregated here. And let me look at what I can learn, right? And so I had a great time till some, you know, I remember that particular day and there's something I spotted a problem which I could solve and I posted the solution to that.
Mm-hmm.
And immediately after that, I noticed my focus completely changed. Now, when you solve a problem, you're awarded certain points and then people, they praise you and this and that. And I noticed that my focus now entirely shifted. I was no longer scrolling through the forum looking for what I can learn. Instead, I started looking for where I can garner points with what little I know.
Mm.
Right? With my very limited knowledge, I was seeing like where I can, you know, garner more and more points. And it took me a while to catch that what I just sacrificed at that moment. When I started catering to that sense of, you know, that you get points.
Right.
Yeah, you see the points increasing day by day. When I started looking at that lower goal, what I missed was the higher goal of actually learning something new. My learning had completely stagnated. That was the first thing. So then I started looking at, you know, let me go through it and see what is the pattern of how points are being awarded to various posts in that. And then I discovered to my horror that the maximum points would go to the low-hanging fruit, as they call, the easy problems.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so obviously there are a lot of people looking for solutions of the easy problems. And when that gets solved, many people, they awarded points. But I saw the really insightful answers, right? The ones that had very deep connections in math, they were being awarded very few points because there were very few who could even grasp what those were about. But if you were a person who knew enough, had enough background, you would see that, wow, what a fantastic contribution this person is making, right?
Mm.
And I saw it has an inverse relationship. The actual value that a person is able to contribute versus what the world values it at.
Right.
There is an inverse proportion. And I'm pretty sure this many people can relate to that. This is what happens in life too. Right, and then we should be very clear that if this can happen in a very small sphere like that, how do the world's metrics compare with what are Swami's metrics? Right, what the world values and what does Swami value? And very clear, if anybody who listens to the discourse that Swami gives, the benedictory discourse during the convocation, it's a completely the antithesis of any benedictory discourse given by anybody at a convocation anywhere. Because the first thing that Swami says is that all this education is naught, comes to naught. It is completely useless unless you continue to pursue that inquiry into the self. So all of this gets relegated to nothing.
Right. I think what you said was very, very profound. I think something which we need to really look into, where, you know, we get lost in the assessment that people do of ourselves.
Yes.
And I think just yesterday I was thinking of it, that's precisely how we have literally messed up with the education system, and that's precisely what's wrong with our life too. You know, when you look at the education system, I was thinking about something like the language of Sanskrit, right? When we were in school, we took a course in Sanskrit. You know, when you take a lesson like that, when you take a course like that, the motive of that course or that purpose behind you taking up a language like that is to learn the language, right? At the end of the day, you should be able to understand the language and to an extent at least communicate it. You know, when you take a German course or a course in Hindi, the whole idea is that.
Or better yet, appreciate the literature
right,
in that language.
Appreciate the literature, if not communicate, at least to be able to absorb the literature which is written in that language. Right? So that is the purpose. So to ensure that the learning happens, you have an assessment system. Right? You have exams, and you have tests which periodically test whether you're learning the thing periodically. But you know, after some time, the focus changes so much that it's now only about acing the assessment that 10 years, 20 years later, I look back, I cleared all my exams. You know, I've done very well in all my exams. And the fact that I'm here with a master's degree means that I've done well in all of those school exams. But I've not learned the language. Right? So we have mastered this act of completely relegating the purpose of what we're doing to dust and going after this assessment system. And that's precisely what we're doing in life. Because when you look at the Vedic system, which Swami would always go back to, the Gurukul system, no, you are taught the message, you are taught the Vedantic truths when you are a 12-year-old, right? That's what they say. Up to about 12 or 14, you are in the Gurukula. And then you are sent out into the world almost like a test of what you have learned. As Swami was telling in that verse again, you know, the test of your wisdom is, are you able to practice it? Are you able to put it into practice when you are going through the vicissitudes of life? So it's almost like how you perform in your relationship, how you perform in your career, how you perform as a citizen in the society is a test of whether you've learned what you're supposed to learn. But we have precisely done the same thing which we've done in our education system. We've forgotten the purpose and we are out there to do better in our career, do better in our, you know, gather as many friends around us as possible and put our status on the Facebook and get as many likes. And adorations as possible.
Right.
So I think that is what makes the journey so hollow, because you've completely removed the purpose out of the whole thing.
Right? Which that's why the scriptures, Indian scriptures, they have this very admonitory story of what Indra went to. You know, so Indra at some point of time, for whatever reason, he decides to take birth as a pig on this planet, right? And pretty soon he forgets the original purpose. And he finds himself wallowing in mud, thoroughly enjoying himself in that, and forgets, as I said, the purpose for which he has taken birth as a pig. And that's when Narada has to come down and remind, that you're not a pig. And at that time, even then, Indra resists and resists, till it strikes him that, oh, I had this work to do, So it terrifies him that, even he, such an accomplished lord, the head of all the gods, and for him, it's so easy for a person like him to get enmeshed. And what is the fate of a man?
Right, so going back to what you were telling about, playing to the audience when you're a speaker, and which is Swami not doing. I remember someone telling that a good speaker is somebody who makes his listeners uncomfortable. Someone said, you should literally make people wriggle and feel that they're wrong. And I think that's precisely what the Upanishads do, and that's precisely what Swami did when he gave a discourse. This morning I was in the other show, I had a question of a person who asked this question, like very, very desperate, saying that every time I keep a goal for myself, that I should listen to what Swami says, or I should do this, what Swami likes, I keep failing. And there was so much of agony and, self-judgment of what he was going through. And he said, what am I supposed to do? And I feel very, very bad that I'm not able to do this. I think no one else can do it other than Swami, right? And that's what happens to us when we suddenly start looking at ourselves from the place where Swami is talking, right? From the ideal which Swami is placing in front of us. Then you look at ourselves, then as you're saying, you no more judge yourself depending on the peers around you. The world, the way it assesses you, does not matter to you. Now when you look at yourself in the light of what Swami expects of you, you feel so uncomfortable being yourself. And I think that is what Swami was saying, that, read these books, you know, go into the Upanishads. It will make you feel uncomfortable, but that's what it's meant to do.
Yes, and if you are on that spiritual path, you know, the path of transformation, the one thing that you cannot look for is comfort. Somebody was saying that there are two ways of enjoying a mountain climb, you know. So one is to read about it in the papers. Sit in your sofa and say, you know, oh, that climber, like we had news just the other day that a climber climbed the Mount Everest twice, right? And this is one way of enjoying is that, you know, oh, that is an achievement. But to put yourself in that climber's shoes, you know, how she has the vicissitudes of actually climbing the Mount Everest, right? And what you can see is that achievement came with enormous amount of discomfort associated with it. Whereas we are here and not on that mountain, we don't have that achievement against our name because we preferred the comfort of our sofa, right? And so that is a choice you've got to make, right? As you rightly said, as a spiritual seeker, what we cannot afford is therefore that kind of comfort. We should be comfortable being uncomfortable with what Swami is pointing
at. Be ready to be shaken out of status quo.
Because that, like as I say, you know, actually a spiritual seeker is always climbing Mount Never Rest. You know, so you can. So the moment you think that I have arrived, that is a big mistake.
Right.
So, and you must. So therefore, the advice that you must, what shall I say, enjoy the whole climb itself. The process of climbing is to be enjoyed, and the Upanishads give that very, very beautiful context. They're saying, like, you know, as your true identity, like deep within who you truly are, is already divine, right? So then what is this whole game about? So you must learn to therefore enjoy the whole game of, you know, realizing that divinity. It's something within you. It's there somewhere to be found, right? So you must enjoy that climb, then enjoy the whole process.
Right. And Swami is saying that when he says, you know, that this desire and attachment is actually taking you away from these two very important questions of who am I and how should I live?
Yes.
I think that's those two questions. I don't know if there was no Swami in our life, whether we would have asked those questions.
Yeah.
Right? Because that's what Swami makes you do when you're, you know, you really ask what you call those existential questions. And what am I really doing? Where am I really heading? And most of us probably will question that when, you know, put in a difficult situation, when you're going through a relationship crisis, or you know hitting the rock bottom in your career, you start asking those questions. But what Swami is saying is, can you ask those questions when you're going after your desires, when there's vitality in your body, you know, when you still can pursue your desires, but you stop and ask these questions? I think that is what makes the difference of a spiritual quest itself. You're not forced into asking these questions, but you always have these questions in the back of your mind, and they literally, you know, guide your decisions and choices that you make across life.
Absolutely, yeah. No, because again, that coming back to discomfort, really, like as you pointed out, see, many times the practices which we are comfortable with right now, you know, like it could be our eating habits or drinking habits. And the moment Swami says, you know, like, do not eat non-veg or do not take to drinking, for example, right? And we should understand that A, that is not motivated with an intention to debase you, humiliate you in any way, right? That intention is pure love, you know. Then, like, Swami can see how it drags you down. And he says, I would not want my children to undergo that suffering. And when Swami points that out at various levels, you know, when Swami points out something, we will feel uncomfortable, right, as you pointed out. But what we should understand is it that Swami is not somebody distinct from us. It is our own voice speaking back to us, saying that, you know, this is where I would like to see you. This is who you truly are, right? And that, with that intention, when we understand, I think, like, we can really keep progressing, you know, very quickly towards the goal.
Right. Yeah. And of course, the next part, Swami speaks about human values, which is so very beautiful. And I think we'll have to leave it for next week, because there's a lot of important points that Swami made there. And one thing which struck me, probably we'll dwell on that a little more next time, is, you know, you're talking about the human experience. And to be honest, none of us have figured out anything enough about it, right? And neither our parents nor our teachers, nobody can give us a clear idea of what we are meant to do with life. If there's someone who has the authority to say that, I think it's someone like Swami. You know, that's what a guru is meant to, the role the guru is meant to play in your life.
Mm-hmm.
And Swami is standing there and saying that human values is most important. And Swami is saying that it is when you adhere to these human values that you really feel happiness.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But I wonder how much faith we really have in that.
Yeah.
You know, when Swami says that even if you lose everything in the process, even if you, in the view of the world, you're a loser.
Yes.
Right? Very but important. You will find real happiness if you stick to that.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it finally comes down to the faith of how much trust you have in Swami's words.
Yeah.
Because, yes, our experience is different. You know, it does make you feel insecure when you have to take a decision which is going to take away your livelihood or take away your job. But Swami is saying that, no, it is going to give you happiness. But I think it's just that leap of faith, as Swami would say that.
Right.
And that's where it all lies.
It's like how in the Bible Jesus says, just wrap up your belongings and then follow me. It's precisely that. I'm paraphrasing. I don't have the exact words. But that's precisely our guidance, you know. So he says, pack up and start.
Right.
You just do it.
It reminds me of what Victor Kano used to say, you know, when he went to Zambia to start the school. He wanted to start a school, a Sai school, so he came and asked Swami, and Swami said, yeah, go to Zambia.
Mm.
He said, Swami, I have nothing in Zambia. He said, I don't come from that country.
Mm.
He's from Sierra Leone, right?
Mm.
So he said, I'm not from that country. I've just visited that place once. I don't have any money there, or property there. Swami said, no problem, go to Zambia. Zambia is a good place, right? So, Victor Kanu says that, you know, he knew it was going to be very difficult, but he did not have the guts to ask any further questions.
Mm.
He said, but women are more bold. So his wife asked Swami, but Swami, what do you do for the money? Right? And Swami, absolutely nonchalantly and casually, Swami said, sell your house and build the school. Right? And, you know, that is where lifetimes of maturity comes into play, because Victor Kanu was saying that, thanks for his Christian upbringing, he was immediately reminded of that particular statement where a rich man comes to Jesus and says, you know, how do I redeem myself? And Jesus tells him that sell your house and come with me.
Mm.
And the rich man runs away.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And he said he was reminded of that episode. And he said, here is Swami repeating what happens in the Bible and I will not run away.
Right.
And he goes back, he sells his house and starts. And of course, I'm sure the happiness and the fulfillment which he felt, just talking about it and reading about it, we can't even experience an iota of that.
And we should remember that in the end, it was the fishermen who were ready to pack up their belongings and follow Jesus. Right? Those who had very little.
Those who had very little. And in fact, that little was so much more than what the rich man could give away with. I think we'll leave it with that. It's a very, very beautiful clip. We'll come back to what Swami mentioned in that. A lot of practical tips, starting from students to people in career and householders. And of course, Swami ends with how important it is for women of today to even go back to the Upanishads. So all of that, we'll leave it for next week. Thank you, dear listeners, for joining us. Do join us again next week for the continuation and the completion of this discourse. In a short while from now, you'll be joined by Brother Bishu for the last segment of the day, Outside, Inside, Deep Inside. Thank you for being with us. We most humbly offer this effort at Swami's Lotus Feet.